Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts as they share with you the insider's guide to property investing.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and he is Ben Kingsley, the chair of the Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the reigning and current Property Investment Advisor of the Year. Hello, mate. That tash is looking very, very good.
Oh, it's good, mate. It's driving me nuts, but come on, everyone. You need to pitch in. 2,000 is my target. I'm very close to halfway there, but it's past the halfway of the month.
That's all right.
So to help everyone out, we've actually put it on the homepage. I think there's a few people that probably went on to the website and couldn't find where to donate. So just look for the beautiful mustache, which says donate on the homepage. Click on that, give us some $10. Let's help men's health.
I must say, there's only 4 years age difference between us, but with that tash, it looks like about 14 years age difference between us.
Yeah, a bit of salt and pepper in there, a bit of grey hair. That's why I don't do it.
Very good.
But who knows, mate, when I get bald, because, you know, I've got a nice solar panel appearing at the top there, so when I do get bald, I might have to go the beard just to sort of, have a bit of facial hair somewhere.
Mate, I think you should. I'm sure that'll go down very well with Jane. Hey, for the listeners, if you're wondering why we're rabbiting on about tashes and balding and all that sort of stuff, it's because there's no footy on. And for some of our listeners, that is a very, very good thing.
It's draft week next week, isn't it?
It is draft week next week. Some of our listeners, can you believe, don't like us rabbiting on about sport.
They fast forward through this bit.
Well, they're pretty lucky because you don't like cricket. So that's the cricket season, so we're pretty safe there. Hey, today we thought we would talk about... Oh, before we do that, we're about to hit print.
Yes, the book.
Can you believe it?
Done.
Can you believe it? A year of getting that book to deadline, thinking that it's done, and then there's a tweak, and the publishers come back. So
thank God, probably was it 6 weeks ago, we said we'll have some copies before Christmas, because if we didn't put that deadline on, we'd probably have it out by February.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, the good news is we've sent it out to a few people, and they've read it, and they've come back with some complimentary stuff. And I think the overwhelming thing for the benefit of our listeners is that it's plain talking, common sense, not a single Ferrari diamond ring inside. It's all about just common sense investing, how you do it properly. Yeah.
Not about retiring yesterday and on megabucks. It's just nice frameworks, good processes from the ground up.
It's from the ground up.
Pretty much, the armchair's guide. So it's, looking forward to getting some feedback from our listeners.
Mate, I thought we'd have a quick chat today about something that's happening to me a fair bit in the market, and that's regarding price research.
Yep, and, great topic.
We live in Melbourne. We've bought in Sydney. I've bought in every state and territory in this country for the show. And one of the big things about that is you have very, very different processes depending on which city you're in. So, for example, my hometown of Perth and Brisbane and Adelaide, it's offer and acceptance, put an offer in, it gets accepted. And then even in Adelaide, you've got a cooling off period with no penalty. So you can do all your due diligence there. Yep. Whereas in Melbourne and Sydney, it's because they're big auction centric cities, quite often you have to do all your DD first. Yep. So there are differences around the grounds.
Yeah, there are.
But I guess the price research is quite difficult for Melbourne and Sydney in particular, because there's quote ranges. And so we thought we'd maybe help our listeners, even for the listeners who aren't in those two cities, if they're considering buying in those two cities, just how they can do some quality price research. Because, we know that the agent is working for the vendor, they're being paid for the vendor, and they're trying to get as much interest in the property as they can. So perhaps not the most ideal person to take your price research info from.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, this is what I'm going to be asking you a lot of questions today is around this, how do you do that? So, I'll put you in your seat as a BA and you're basically, you've identified a suburb or you've identified maybe a cluster of areas, like a local government area or neighbouring suburbs, and that's your strike zone. Mm. So take me through what you're sort of thinking about when it gets now down to, identifying the property and how you go about it.
Yeah, good one. I think the point here too is there's a lot of information that's out there. RP Data have been really great at providing some really cool information for free. But my point on that is a little bit of knowledge can be dangerous, because being able to do comp work for me takes a couple of hours just to get it right. And so really what we're trying to do is I always say real estate, unlike a share where BHP share number 1001 is the same as BHP share number 1071, no two properties are the same. It's like a fingerprint. So being able to do comps is two part strategy, one part intuition, if you like.
Yep. Yeah, it's a good way of putting it.
And really, it's about being as best as you can to compare like with like. So the obvious one is to start with suburb. So if I've got a house. So I'm looking to buy a house in a four bedroom house in Newport for a client.
Yep.
And that straight away, I've got to, within Newport, look to see what other four-bedroom houses have sold. So my first starting point is the suburb, and then I'm arriving at a pointy.
So can I just clarify that then? You're not, when you're buying for a client, you're not just isolated to one suburb, are you?
No.
So what sort of numbers of suburbs would be in your watch list when you're actually, you know, at that initial stage? So you've got your price point. You've got your strategy in terms of you're either going for growth, balance, or yield strategy. Inside that, roughly how many suburbs might be on your radar?
Generally, 10 primary and then a number of secondary because yep. I prepare a what I call a blueprint that I send out to a client, and that's to give them some comfort around because we talked about investment grade strategy, we talked about investment grade suburb, then we talked about investment grade property. If we get the strategy right, which is largely your domain, I've got to then give them some confidence around the fact that the suburb is right.
Yep.
And, you know, we've got some views around, you know, I bought my first property in 1999 and all I had to do was really open the West Australian, put my finger on, you know, the real estate section and whatever my finger landed on, buy it, because the rising tide will lifted all the ships.
Yep.
But we've got a very strong view that that's not going to happen going forward. So there's 10 primary suburbs that I can give the analysis to the client where I say, these are the suburbs that I'm targeting and these are the reasons why. And then, of course, if I told them, you know, there could be up to 30 suburbs. Just let's use Melbourne as an example.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of data for them to go through. So I do 10 primaries and then
yep.
then a bunch of secondaries that we can
yep.
analyse.
Yep.
So once we've determined that we know which suburb we're in, then I find the right house. And it really starts from the macro to the micro. And we're all about framework. So
yep. The
two houses, I need to find out, first of all, that ideally they're in the same suburb, but sometimes I can't do that. Sometimes you can't find one, so you've got to go to the next best suburb and then apply a little bit of sixth sense to it.
So is there a radar? What sort of distance are you talking about here?
Ideally a kilometre radius.
Yep.
Perfect world.
Yep, 1 kilometre radius. Yep.
Sometimes you can't do that. And ideally as close in time frame as possible. So if I look at comparables in the same suburb for the last 12 months, well, comparing now in November to January is you know, you've got to apply some science to it.
Yep.
But typically speaking, as close a time frame as I can possibly get within the same suburb is my starting point. And we use CoreLogic RP data as a reference for that. You can go to the portals and get their sold evidence, but ultimately that's the starting point. And then once we've identified same number of bedrooms, we then have to compare land size.
Yep.
So 400 versus 300, because we know that the more land we can comfortably afford.
Yeah. So when we're talking about land size, basically we're saying is it comparable? So you can squeeze a four-bedroom house on 380 square metres, but there's also another property up the road at 760 square metres. Well, we know that land is where the real sort of solid value is, the intrinsic value is in the actual land. That's the, you know, that's what appreciates and the dwelling deteriorates in value over time. So to get that clear, we're saying that we're looking for comparables. And if we had a 760 land size and a 380 land size, they're not comparable.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically looking at those things. What about we're getting to comparing apples with apples, aren't we?
Yeah, well, the complexity comes when you just pure land size, but then is it on the high side of the street, the low side of the street? What aspect does it have? But also usable.
Yeah.
So something might have an extra couple of hundred square metres of land, but a goat track versus something that's a bit more usable. Or the proportions, you may have a skinny frontage and a long depth versus a wide frontage and a shorter depth. So, you know, that's why I say it takes a couple of hours. And
it does.
And I think a little bit of knowledge is dangerous because I often have clients come to me and say, hey, look, I've seen that this property sold for X because RP Data has given me the data.
Yeah.
Therefore, I think I should pay this. But I say, particularly if they're interstate, if you haven't seen the lay of the land, that can be problematic doing that. So so we start with suburb. We then, best as we can, compare apples to apples with land.
Yep.
And then we go to looks.
So looks or building materials first?
Looks for me, because yep. I want to go. Is it a period home?
Yep.
Versus is it just an old post-war home?
Yep.
Because I know that there's extra value placed on period yep. in yep. various cities.
Yep.
So I want to know facade first.
So, but that's you identifying a good asset versus what something that mightn't have that owner-occupied appeal.
Okay. Yep.
But obviously, when you're doing your comps, you've got to make sure it's weatherboard with weatherboard. And brick with brick, fair
yeah.
to say.
Yeah, in most so cases. Sorry. I'd go looks first in terms of period appeal, street appeal.
Yeah.
And then I'd go, if I'm doing same appeal,
yeah.
absolutely.
Fine.
You could have a weatherboard Victorian and a brick Victorian, for example.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the other thing to keep in mind too is, you know, it's cheaper to renovate, you know, weatherboards than it is bricks.
Yes.
So if someone's wanting to do that as well.
So just for the listeners' benefit, just explain how it is. I mean, effectively, you pop the weatherboards off and your frames there, they're easily accessible, whereas the brick home could have dual brick, so, you know, double brick, and then you got to hammer that down, clear all that away, rebuild that brick, whereas, you know, if you're sensible about some of those weatherboards you take off, some of the hardwood weatherboards you can continue to keep using. So that's sort of what we're talking about, isn't it? Just an easier access. So with a brick home, with the weatherboard homes, you can take the weatherboards off and run your electrical wiring a lot easier and then reclad it. You can't just simply move the bricks out the way and then do that. So that's sort of part.
Yeah, labor and logistics really.
Is, correct.
Then hopefully access. So we're starting to build trying as best as we can to get two thumbprints or two fingerprints to match up by starting out wide and coming in close. So the next thing is obviously aspect. In the southern hemisphere, we want north.
Yep.
In the northern hemisphere, we want south. And that's largely, particularly in Melbourne, given that we want to have as much natural light as we can when the sun's lower in the top of the day in winter. And then it really comes down to floor plan comparisons. And for me, a textbook floor plan is always the starting point. So I always walk into a property with the textbook floor plan in mind and then reference it to it. So by that, I mean, if you're walking through... I just call it a double-fronted house. Ideally, you want the bedrooms at the front. You want services in the middle. So you've got your bathroom and then you've got your laundry. You then want your living to come next, which is typically, ideally, open-plan living with your kitchen over the entertainment.
These days, that's the modern, yep.
And then step out into alfresco entertaining on a north-facing. That is textbook perfect.
Perfect. And that's owner-occupier appeal. So linking that back to owner-occupier appeal, it's clear, isn't it, that if you could have your noise zones, your family zones, your TV zones away from your bedroom zones and have that buffer of the plumbing and the laundry and the bathroom in the middle, filling that buffer, perfect.
Mm.
You know, so the parents can watch late-night TV without affecting the kids' sleep cycles. And that's what they're thinking about.
Absolutely. You know,
that's exactly what they're thinking about.
And some of these older properties you come into, you sometimes find that the bathroom is at the back. So if you logically think that through, teenagers, they've got their friends over and mum and dad have a shower at 8:39. Well, they've got to run through, you know, with a towel around their waist, trying to get to the bedroom from the back.
Yep.
So these are legitimate logistical things that we've got to cover. So, and to be honest, that really is where a lot of the time comes into it, because... You know, suburb, land, look, building material, aspect. They're quick assessments. Yep. It's then just stacking up the floor plans next to each other and then placing a value on, you know, for example, you know, you want bedroom sizes to be minimum 3x3.
Yep.
Sometimes you will go under, for sure. But, you know, these are practical reasons around space and logistics of where the floor plans are in terms of square meterage.
And especially if you don't have a built-in. If you've got less than 3x3 with no built-in, then obviously, you know, the classic case, and you see this around Sydney a lot in the Bondi apartments, Coogee apartments, and anywhere beachside where the second bedroom, you know, built in 60s, 70s, they just didn't accommodate for a double bed. So we've got those classic sort of $10 frames that hang all your clothes on them, and that's it. I mean, the bedroom's sort of a retreat zone, and then you've got the one living area, and that's how, you know, that's how these people roll. That's how the tenants... In their early 20s, you know, they're having the time of their life. They don't want to be home. They want to be out and about. But they would normally then just have a little nook type desk just to throw their laptop on so they can call their parents when they need to, you know, Skype their parents. But that's sort of what we're saying. And then, you know,
well, that's an important thing, because we're looking for opportunities for a nook, because we know that a home computer is just paramount now compared to the 60s and the 70s.
Correct, and some of the other great parts of floor plan that we also like to see is if we can get the toilet out of the bath. So in some of those apartments, the toilet's in the bath area, and that's not ideal, especially if you've got two friends as opposed to a couple. You know, they want to try and separate that. So there's a little X factor in having that separate toilet from the bathroom area as well. So floor plan is a lot of what we think about.
Oh, absolutely. It's critical. And even like in an apartment, you know, little quirks like having an entry hall into the apartment, having hallways within the apartment. Yeah. If you're looking at a floor plan, you don't see any hallways. You can automatically, without sort of getting a ruler out, know that it's small.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
open the front door into the kitchen. Yeah. Oh, hello. Open the front door into, oh, there's the couch. Oh, yeah. Let me get around the couch. I mean, you know, in those types of apartments, they do set them up so that the couch creates that artificial hallway, doesn't it? So there's that sort of room there.
Well, the important thing to remember is if we're buying for the long term, buy and hold investors, which we're encouraging our listeners to be.
Absolutely.
They're going to send a valuer around to revalue the portfolio for ongoing, you know, purchases.
Absolutely.
So these are the things that are going through a valuer who's going to do a full valuation, not a roadside desktop one, but a full valuation. That's what's going to, you know, their job is to go, I'm valuing this property. I'm going to cut a 1 kilometre radius around here and see what's sold. So if yours does have the extra wow factor of hallways, it has the separation between bedrooms with the bathroom in the middle, it has a toilet that's separate, you know, that's got a window that's facing a north orientation for an apartment that requires, you know, extra light, they matter.
They absolutely matter. And they matter, again, from interest. So, you know, a valuer is a human being. And the valuations are subjective. They're not. They can't be purely objective. I mean, I love your point before about two fingerprints. Well, no two fingerprints are exactly the same. I think that's a really great message here. You will never, ever get two absolutely perfectly similar properties unless it's a duplex with the same floor plan. So it does come down to that. Now, so coming back to that point around floor plan, is that putting you on the spot? Is there no, or is there anything that's like, as soon as I see that, I'm done? Like, is there anything that's an absolute walk away?
Well, it's more about, can I fix it? Yep. So if you look at a floor plan and go, can it be fixed? Yes, you'd be interested in it. But if it can't be fixed, if you think about that textbook floor plan that I talked about before, and this one's so far removed from that, and to move it would be a huge cost in terms of plumbing, yep, in terms of configuration, and it would just be too far expensive to actually do it rather than just go and find something that's yep, better. For me, that's the... can it be fixed or can't it be fixed is probably the filter that I run it through.
Yep, sure. So some of the things that sort of are sometimes exemptions is if you busy roads, having the front bedrooms as opposed to that. So obviously we're not big on main roads, but if you've got a side road that does a bit of traffic, say in the morning peak hours, but settles down during the day, sometimes having the living zone in the front and then having some of the bedrooms at the back, as you know, if it's flipped around, that can sometimes work, can't it? And then you don't then get that alfresco out the back, but in some of these sort of inner city areas, they're small courtyards anyway. And if they're, you know, if I pull the door open and three streets down, I'm at the cafe, and having all those sort of lifestyle drivers of the local area, we'll consider that one.
Well, that's a really good point. I think there's a bit of sixth sense that comes into it that can only come from doing it a lot.
Yeah.
Because I think what you just described is a really great example. Because if I'm buying, call it the old 70s villa style, which I love, central driveway, four villas off it, for example.
Yeah.
Typically speaking, I'd want to buy at the front.
Yeah.
Typically speaking.
Yeah.
But if I'm on a secondary main road, I don't necessarily want to be at the front of that one. I might want to be at the back where I've got a better courtyard. So I'll always say there's no rules of thumb.
Yeah,
there's frameworks and there's 80%.
Yeah.
But you've still got to throw a little bit of sixth sense into the mix.
Same with those little villas or flats or whatever we call them. Some of them are well designed where they have the garage with the common wall, whereas sometimes they can be butted up where your living zone is only separated by a brick wall to the other living zone. And that's, you know, so if you get a bad neighbour who's playing music at 2 a.m. in the morning, that's pumping straight through. So certainly when you look at the configuration of the overall block and how that's positioned, There's nothing better than having the car park next to the car park. That's good design. And I think owner occupiers will pick up on that, and so will tenants.
Yeah.
You know, so if you think, oh, I'm getting a bargain because, you know, why is this one so much cheaper? It's probably because you haven't thought about that common wall component associated with it.
Well, that's a good point of what can be fixed and what can't be fixed. So if someone really places a value on privacy and they don't have the separation with the garages, that just cannot be fixed. You've got to move on. You've got to look for another one.
Yep. So there's a deal breaker on floor plan right there. So that's a good one.
So that's kind of the process that we go through in terms of being able to get our comps done, starting out wide in terms of suburb and then ending up at the actual floor plan of the property. But I guess part of the comp analysis is we have access to databases that allow us to see every transaction that happens in Australia. Now, not every person has that. And you know, there is better data out there. But if you are looking to, if you're going to buy something this weekend or you're in the middle of a transaction now, the best resources typically is, if you don't want to pay the subscription fees for these, is typically just go to the real estate portals and look at their sold property section.
Yep.
Because most, well, a quick story, I had a client sort of say to me, here's a property I like, I reckon you should go for it. The quote range was, you know, it was an apartment, the quote range was 330 to 360. And he said, how much do you reckon it'll go for? I said, well, there's actually been some recent sales that suggest it's closer to four. Is really that far out of the quote range?
Yeah.
And so for anyone who is, and we've talked about it enough, we've seen enough about underquoting, but in Melbourne and Sydney, underquoting is something that happens all the time.
All the time.
And using that as a guide for price research is flawed. I remember being at an auction, it would have been about 6 or 8 weeks ago, where a woman was crying when it flew past 520 and it ended up selling for 620. And the price guide was 390 plus.
Yeah, wow.
Now, the poor thing, she would have got a solicitor to review the contract, potentially at cost. She would have got a building inspector in at cost. She would have spent an enormous amount of emotional capital on will I, won't I get this property? And it flew past and she was in tears. And I haven't seen that often, but I'm sure people have got, you know, probably get more angry than crying. But it's terrible.
I agree, especially when they've been out there in the field for 6 weeks. And 6 weeks probably when you start to get your headspace around the results, because you've seen, you've gone through the campaign or multiple campaigns on those properties that you're watching. And then you come across a property that you know is underquoted, right? So what's the best thing to do? Front the agent on it and basically say, look, are you seriously thinking that this property is going to go within this quote range? Because if you are, you know, Smith Street down the road sold for X and that's comparable to this and blah. And then so don't be aggressive about it. Just sort of say, I'm just struggling to align that alignment, and ask them straight up, okay, obviously to get this listing, you would have given the vendor some comps. What are you comping this again? And I really like John McGrath's view on this, and that is he should be, you know, agents should be transparent. You know, because if you have a really transparent and open dialogue for both the seller and the buyer, there's no one missing out. No, here's a good story. I've got a client at the moment on the weekend who's trying to sell a property in Redfern, right? And there hasn't been a lot of interest. The market's softened off a bit. And so now the agents, after saying quite a low, is now sort of saying, oh, should we actually take it to auction? And I just thought this is interesting because it's more about him than what it is about the vendor. In other words, the auctioneer and the agency doesn't want to see it on their books as not being a success story. And obviously there's potential new listers who are coming to watch how he operates, and now he wants to shut it down and just go straight to a private sale. And I thought, well, that's disappointing, that's frustrating for the vendor, because he's like, you know, this guy's gone to his repertoire of tricks to try and get the best result. None of them have worked. And now he's sort of saying, well, let's just go private treaty. Now, the moment they go private treaty, the psyche of the buyer is that they're going to get it for cheaper than what it's listed at. So I just said to my client, I said, look, I would still go ahead with the auction and let him have the red face. You've got nothing. You know, you've done nothing wrong. And you never know. You might get some turn-ups on the day and, you know, one or two. But if you go to private treaty, you don't get that emotional or that competition, that ego kicking in that makes you get that result. So, and fortunately for him, he doesn't have to sell. It's just not, he wants a different style of property for his needs. So it was like, well, let's park it. Let's revisit it in a couple of months' time. So another great example of where, you know, the agent's sort of taken him on a journey and unfortunately it's fallen short.
I think you raise a really good point for the listeners to know that I always advise clients or friends or anyone who's asking me about how agents work, don't get angry or frustrated with them. Get educated. That's a bit cliche, but just understand their role. They, two things. One, their client is the seller, not you, the buyer. And two, if they don't sell the property, they don't eat. So once you know those two things, you understand they're doing the best thing that they can do to, you know, they're a person, they've got a family, they've got to put food on their table. So therefore, it just takes all the emotion out of it. Now, you can get frustrated and you get upset at this underquoting and, you know, it ends up being in, you know, in the headlines every second month. But at the end of the day, they're trying to cast a net as far as they can. There's one fish in the middle, the bigger one, and they're using the other fish to get that one they want in the middle of the net. That's all they're doing.
Yep.
Quote it low, watch it go. We've said it a number of times. So don't get frustrated. Just understand what your price research is. A rough rule of thumb in Melbourne, and it's rough, to be honest. Don't use it as gospel. But the bottom end of the quote range, add 15% to it.
Yeah,
to see if you're in the mix.
In the peak of the market, add 20.
Yep.
So if it's a seller's market, add 20. And I think in some cases, even 25. In Sydney market in the headiness. So if you work on a clearance rate, I'd probably say the same thing. Anything above 80, 85, you're almost 20, 25. Anything between 65 and 75, you're probably 15s. And anything from under 65 in a clearance rate point of view, you're probably at 10s in terms of what that looks like. So they've got a job to do. We as buyer's agents have got a job to do. And it's a really important message. And I was going to ask you that same thing. So when you've done your comps, what sort of standard deviations do you use? Are you using 5, 10, 15%? Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, again, that's a bit of a sixth sense thing. So we've just comped one in Essendon that we're looking to buy, and the comps sort of suggest that it's anywhere between $1 million and $1.5 million.
Yeah.
But I've said to the client, but it's a period home. It's in a beautiful street. There's probably a slight sort of premium that comes from that. So don't be surprised if it goes from $1.5 million to $1.1 million. And that's only from knowing what else is sold, knowing that there's not a lot of other properties that are similar. So the potential underbidders are going to be going, well, I missed this one, I've got to get it. But I always say to them, if it's four or five deep on the day and you still pick it up, that's good news for when you want to sell it or value it or whatever.
I mean, I got asked that question. So when should you buy owner-occupied properties? And I always say, If I'm on a property and there's no other interest in the property, I'm concerned. Mm. I mean, you know, because if it's that good, even in a softer market, it should have other interest on it.
Agreed.
You know, so again, that's a classic case of it performs well in all markets. And that's the scarcity value, the owner occupier, if we keep saying it, you know, it's not rocket science.
The thing to say to the agent is, what's the best comp that you recommend reflects this property that you've talked to the vendor about?
Great,
and ask it in that tone.
Say that again.
Well, it's because they've got the professional ego on the line. So what's the best comp that you recommend for this property that you spoke to the vendor about? Because at the end of the day, you're actually shining a light to say, actually, if you tell me the one down the street that's nowhere near it, it's actually going to reflect on you personally. So it's almost that, I've got to make sure I don't look stupid.
So going back to that lady who broke down in tears when it passed her price point, if she had done her research, she probably would have realised, as we just drop a pen, she probably would have realised that it wasn't going to go in her budget range. Mm. Now, there's sometimes X factors. So the X factor, and we've talked about this before, is a house on 400 square metres and people go, it's not worth that, but the developer touches it. And he knocks it over and does something amazing with the site because it's that rare earth. It's that backfill that I talked about last week's episode. It's like, you know, you don't see people knocking down standard houses out in the suburbs, do you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was having that conversation with a client and sort of ratifying what I was talking about in terms of the most valuable land. If that land out wide was valuable that you could knock down the home and build another one and still be within the price point that you haven't overcapitalized or spent too much. But in the city areas, in the inner city areas, that can happen. You can bowl down a really nice house in Richmond or Woolloomooloo or Woollahra or wherever.
Bulimba,
you know, Ascot, and all of a sudden you can still materialize that gain because it is, you know, high demand from an owner-occupied point of view.
Well, very good points. My last point here is for research that often people don't think about is think about the underbidders from a property last week that might turn up at the property this week. So by that, if they're reasonably comparable and one sold for, call it 1.176, it's reasonable to assume there's an underbidder at 1.175 who missed out, who might want to come over and check out the property that you're looking at. So again, you've got to go through the framework to make sure it stacks up at oranges, oranges, but that'll also give you a, you know, a rough idea. Those people just don't disappear and say, I'm not buying anymore. They're going to go somewhere. They might sit it out, but they might need to go somewhere. So
there we have it.
Yeah, exactly. There you have it, folks. If you're interested in doing your own price research, hopefully that provides you with a bit of framework. We understand that we've made that sort of Sydney and Melbourne centric. We know that if you're in Perth, if you're in Adelaide, if you're in Hobart, you're in Queensland, the system's a little bit different. Quite often it's a, there's a price and you can negotiate a little bit lower, but ultimately the principles remain.
Correct.
If you don't have underquoting in Perth or Adelaide or Brisbane, the principles of how you do your price research remain in those cities.
And I'm jumping in from a technical point of view before we finish off. You obviously will work out the square metre of land and you'll work out the square metre of the dwelling and the floor plan. And you will find that agents have a rough idea of square metre of land value and they'll have a rough idea of square metre of floor plan value. So if you ask a great agent or befriend a great agent, in an area, they'll actually give you a range. So they'll say that the land in this area is 8,000 to 9,000 per square meter, and the dwelling is around sort of 4,000 to 6,000 per square meter. And they're just made up numbers because it's going to be different in every area. But all of a sudden, if you wanted to give some technical analysis to it, because we've done the emotional story here and comp to comp, and that's why what Bryce was saying, there's no substitution for experience. There's no substitution for having a trained eye and having that wealth of knowledge from being involved in thousands and thousands of transactions. Unfortunately, if you're just starting out, you won't have that. That's the reality, but a trained eye will have that. So that's why we can skim through hundreds of properties very quickly before we isolate the 20 properties of interest and then start to do our due diligence on those assets.
Exactly. There you go, folks. If you, if you're in the market this week, going to auction, you're buying something private sale, and you're doing some comp work, feel free to send us an email. Let us know how you go. Let us know if that helped you make a better decision with how much you should be paying for the property. Just a quick shout out to our listeners. We've got a summer series coming up, so we will be doing the podcast all the way through Woo-hoo! The Christmas and New Year period. So we know a lot of people are taking holidays and just like to sit by the pool with listening to their favourite music or maybe their favourite podcast. So to be able to do that, we're still encouraging you to send in your Q&A. So visit thepropertycouch.com.au, send us your questions. For those of you that have sent them and haven't heard it read out, make no mistake, they will. They definitely will
be
read out.
They're in the
queue. They're in the queue. We will deal with those. And we've also got some guests coming up for our summer series as well. Successful property investors. We're going to ask them some leading questions. We're going to delve deep, put on our 60 Minutes hat and see if we can ask the leading questions to those folks.
Well, just the big ticket. I mean, these people have been doing it for years and decades. And so why not ask them what are the big things they've learned? You know, what are the big takeout moments on their journey? Just good content.
Agreed. Very good. So they're all the friends of the Property Couch and we'll have them in the coming up in the summer series also. And as I say always, every week, Ibis lets you know first when the episode is out. So if you love Twitter, you love Instagram, you love Facebook, why not check out the Property Couch? Like us and we'll let you know when the free resources come out. We'll let you know when the episodes come out. And of course, you can get the book online as well. So Ben, it's that time of the
mate,
I've remembered every single one of these.
Can't
if someone comes up to
over.
Me in different nationalities, I can say goodbye to them.
Do you?
Which,
really?
which is of course nowhere near the truth. But where are we going this year? This week?
Malay?
Oh, that'll be good for Ibis.
A shout out to Ibis, our producer. Yep, she's from Malaysia. Let's see if I get this right because she's just going to give me some instant feedback. Sampai jumpa lagi.
Ooh.
Oh, I got a clap.
What is it? Sampai?
Sampai jumpa lagi.
There we go. To all our Malaysian listeners, sampai lagi jugai. Not even close.
Sampai jumpa lagi.
There you go, folks. Until next week, have a great week. And
to Ivor's sister who's getting married in Malaysia, good luck to that.
Sampai jumpa lagi.
Well, we don't want to say goodbye until you get married.
Our listeners aren't here anyway. They're not at this point. All right, folks. See you next week. Bye for now.